Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
I just love that intro. Yes, we are here. Good afternoon. Good afternoon everywhere in the lower 48 states, no matter whether it's 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, or 4 o'clock. This is Karen Cataline, and welcome to Spouting Off. It's Tuesday, June 12th, 2018, and what a historic day it is. The left would have you believe that it's nothing, nothing's going on here. Just move right along. Nothing's happening. But a lot has been happening. And we here at Spouting Off are going to talk about it and even spout off about it. So stay tuned for that. Also, in the second half of the show, I am very, very excited to welcome a columnist, somebody very, very interesting that I was made aware of when I, my Facebook page and Twitter page has been just going bananas lately. I've been getting all kinds of action on it. You know, I didn't know how all that stuff worked, but somehow I keep tuning into my Twitter page and, oh my God, it's like 100 tweets going on there and reactions and responses to things I've said. So thank you for the Twitter action. I mean, I'm learning as I go how to make Twitter action. Obviously, I need to learn at the knee of Donald Trump. We all do. Anyway, on Facebook, I was made aware of this piece by Glenn K. Beaton, and the title of which is, gosh, where is it? It's going to be right here momentarily. I'm going to pull it up right now. So stay tuned. Dead air, dead air, dead air, dead air, dead air. It is not word for word, but Marxism to conservatism. How he made the switch. Okay, I've got it exactly. Word for word, verbatim. Glenn K. Beaton, here's how I went from Marxism to conservatism. And I love pieces like this because David Mamet, the playwright, and other people have made that kind of switch. And it's that moment of awareness that I'm so fascinated by. So we're going to talk to Glenn Beaton in the second half of the show or at the commercial break, whichever comes first. But meanwhile, I want to also alert you not only to the Twitter page, which is at KarenCataline.com. No, yeah, at KarenCataline, which is Twitter. And Facebook, the same thing, / KarenCataline, or my website, which is KarenCataline.com. I want to draw your attention to a column I may have mentioned last week. It had just come out in the American Thinker. It is posted up at my website. It's called Me Too and the Midterms. And the reason I think it's so important, and I want you to maybe post it if you are a member or registered with Lucianne.com or what's the other one? Free Republic. There's a lot of news aggregators out there. So if you are so inclined, if you would post that, I think the reason it's so important to me is because there's a lot of information there about what the left seems to be doing for the midterms as it relates to the so-called Me Too movement. And I've been watching this for a long time, and I'm going to just jump to the conclusion because you'll have to read the piece if you haven't already. And that is that conservative women really need to come forward. Excuse me. No cough button there. We're just going for it. I would like to be instrumental in rallying conservative women to speak out, as you may know that I feel strongly about this, about some of the real dangers of the Me Too movement. So go to the American Thinker or to my website, take a look at it. And if you'd like to spread it around like a good disease, I would love that. And we're going to be putting our heads together about rallying conservative women. Conservative women just aren't really into goofy hats that are supposed to resemble body parts. We just don't do that. So we're going to need another way to be the voice of reason, because the left seems to think that if you have two X chromosomes, you deserve to knock out every male. And there was even a piece, I'm getting off the subject, but there was even a piece that suggested that if you're a good feminist male, you have a responsibility to step aside for liberal women to run for office. The left really knows nothing but condescension. Whenever they claim to like you, they condescend to you. If you're the kind of person that likes to be condescended to, you're probably responsive to that sort of thing. But it doesn't move me, and it doesn't move a lot of people who believe that, as I mentioned in my piece, accountability is actually a privilege of adulthood. Think about that for a while. So many people are trying to avoid accountability, but in fact, accountability is a privilege. It means you're the age of consent, and you can take responsibility for what you do. I'm going to digress again and mention that in the Jewish holiday, and that is Holy Day, not Celebration Day necessarily, of Yom Kippur. That is the day when Jews are judged and they open the Book of Life, and we are judged for what we did all year. It could be considered somewhat symbolic because we're judged all the time. And if it is a kind and generous and good kind of judgment, that's a good thing, because we want to learn from our mistakes, don't we? Anyway, on that day, we are grateful to be held accountable. Because what happens if you're a kid and you don't have anybody to be accountable to? It's that nobody cares enough to help you be a better person, isn't it? But I digress. I am pleased as punch about what is going on in this country right now. And it is an exponential exposure of what's happening on the left. That's what's going on. Last night, while I was sleeping, Donald Trump signed an agreement. They actually signed an agreement for North Korea to dismantle and get rid of its nuclear arsenal and become a non-nuclear state. Now, you probably know all the leftist arguments about why this is unimportant. It doesn't matter. It's no big deal. Never mind that presidents for the last several decades, that's Republicans and Democrats alike, couldn't even get either Kim Jong-un or his father to the bargaining table and meet them in person. They tried everything, mostly just throwing money at it, like they do with education. Well, it just needs more money. And you can bet that a lot of that money is getting diverted into very unholy places, as we know from the deep state and the swamp. So what really happened yesterday? If you're listening to this program, you were watching, and I was sleeping, but it is extraordinary. It is an example and an illustration of what actually the free market can do, where the cream rises to the top. There's an awful lot of Republicans that have been spouting off conservative free market rhetoric, but they don't really believe it at all. And here they have a person, a non-politician, who doesn't play their game, but who was spawned, for the lack of a better word, on this free market system that we claim to believe in so greatly. And yet we still have our share of never Trumpers who are more concerned with Trump's manners, which personally I think helped him along with everything else, than they are with his accomplishments, his hard, visible, objective, measurable accomplishments. So they signed an agreement, Trump and Kim. Now, it wasn't very long ago. Even a neighbor of mine was saying the reason he didn't like Donald Trump is because he thought he was going to get us into a nuclear war. And this is all a part of what happens when you watch too much cable news, particularly of the liberal sort, of which almost all of it is, to constantly keep people frightened and hysterical. Now, I don't have any sound bites, but you've heard them all before. They're vicious, hostile, ridiculous kind of sound bites, suggesting that Donald Trump is unhinged, he's crazy, he's mentally ill, and yet nothing could be further from the truth. And frankly, the left can never, ever, never, ever, ever, ever admit that they were wrong. So what do they have left? They have to demean Donald Trump even when he's done something worthy of a Nobel Peace Prize. Unfortunately, the Nobel Peace Prize doesn't mean much anymore because they gave it to Barack Obama simply for getting elected, simply for being black, simply in the hopes that he would do something that symbolized peace or that advanced peace. And I would submit to you that he did precisely and exactly the opposite. In fact, everything he did seemed to be done to demean and endanger the country that elected him and side with our enemies. Now, a lot of people don't have the guts to say that. I don't have hard evidence of it. I'm not an attorney, but all you have to do is look at his policies and the pass that the media gave him. We're talking about the previous president now, and you will see that this was a man who was constantly siding with our enemies. Now, it blows my mind that the left continues to cheer for that, defend that, and yet where do they throw their vitriol and hatred and vicious attacks to the man that just more than likely saved this country and made the world a safer place? These are all the platitudes that the left claims that they care so much about. Donald Trump goes out and he does it, and the left says, no, 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 that's not important. The left says, we care about putting minorities back to work and bettering their situation. Trump goes out and does it, and they say, that doesn't matter. So do you ever wonder what it would be like if we had a president who wasn't owned by special interests, or he used his skills from the free market that we said we believed in, as I mentioned, and that he had the reins of power to uncover and expose the dirt and the corruption in our government that has been allowed to fester for decades and vowed to clean it up on behalf of the people that actually elected him. And then the person who everyone says is not a conservative, no siree. And I would argue he's not really an ideological conservative, but he knows what works. And he went and he put conservative policies in place and then went and illustrated that they actually work. Guess what? That's exactly what we have. Despite every dishonest person fighting him, he gets it from the left, he gets it from the right, and he goes out there and he gets the job done. Now, what utterly fascinates me is I wish I could divine real accurate information about how many people are actually paying attention to the reality and saying, you know what? The left has been lying to me again and again and again. Once they lie to you, remember my favorite Latin phrase? I hope I can remember it. I was supposed to memorize it, but it's my only, one and only Latin phrase. Falsus in uno, falsus in omnibus. If you lie about one thing, you lie about everything. Same thing if you're sitting on a jury. If you find a witness's testimony to be not credible, then you can throw all of their testimony out. And yet, all of the media, with the exception of very, very few citizen journalists, but all of the media has lied and lied and lied again. And yet they can never, ever admit that they were wrong. They've been exposed for rooting out, our enemies, rooting for them and championing policies that would destroy America. Now, that's something that I kind of posted in my tease for this show. Bill Maher was quoted as saying that we need a recession so that we can get rid of Trump, because if the country's doing too well, then Trump might get reelected. Think about that for a minute. That exposes every phony, disingenuous platitude the left has spouted. And don't for a minute believe that Bill Maher is any sort of libertarian. Libertarians have their problems, but Bill Maher ain't it. So Bill Maher epitomizes what's really going on much of the left. The fact that he was honest about it, I think, is most fascinating. He actually told the truth about it, which is that he is rooting for America to suffer and fail, Americans to suffer and fail, so that we can have another Barack Obama clone and really suffer and really be miserable. That's what the left wants. They would prefer high black unemployment. They would prefer rioting in the streets, which we had a lot of during the Obama years. They would prefer a phony promise of an Arab Spring in the Middle East, which really was about consolidating the power of the Muslim Brotherhood and throwing out the equivalent of moderates in the Middle East that were actually friendly to the United States. That's what was really going on in the so-called Arab Spring. We were helping the people that hated America the most and throwing out the people that at least got along with Americans. Here is a story that I'm just going to throw out there that isn't getting a lot of play. And that is that the Saudi prince that has been so forward-thinking and wanting to reform Saudi Arabia, allowed women to go to wrestling matches, that's weird, and allowed women to drive cars. And he's been missing for the last several months. This is what I've heard. Few people are reporting it, but I just thought I'd throw that out there. So here's a president that we have. He exposed and disposed of the Republican elites. He exposed and disposed of the Clinton machine. He did the same with the Bush machine, which is really not no better. Faced down North Korea and then made a deal to bring peace to the world. And all they can say is, well, is he going to keep his promise? It's just amazing. They have to demean him. They have boxed themselves into a corner in such a way that they cannot do much else but demean him. Trump has brought back jobs for everyone and put the minorities whom the left claim they care so much about back to work. The emperors of the left have been naked for so long we didn't think it was possible to expose them. And then suddenly Donald Trump comes along. What amazes me about him is that he can withstand so much, and he just seems to be like Superman with the bullets bouncing off his chest. And not only do the bullets bounce off, they seem to hit the people that shoot him. I've been saying for a long time that he is miraculous at turning the tables on the people that come after him. Now, do I think he's invincible? Do I think he's a Superman? Heck no. But I do think Hashem picked him for a very special purpose. Hashem meaning God. I don't think he could have been elected without it. It just seems too impossible to believe. I'm not the most religious person, but boy, oh boy, when Trump came along, despite the cheating, despite the lies, and said, I can fix this. I want to fix this for America. I'm willing not to take a salary. I'm willing to take a loss in my million-dollar business where I could just relax. I'm 70 plus already, for God's sake. And here I want to help the country and get us out of this mess. And the great thing when you've got an outsider who says they can do all those things, it's really great if they can actually do it. You know, that's Trump's magical card, is that he can actually do it. And he keeps doing it. And that alone is what's going to push him past all the corrupt liars who've done everything they can, including frame him for something they did in order to get rid of him. As I posted here, the left cheered and covered up for the previous president who engaged in countless acts which harmed this country. And then they tried to frame and defame the current one who's brought, I love this pun, unprecedented, because he is an unprecedented president. No, unprecedented president. That's it. Peace and prosperity to our country and to the rest of the world. It is a privilege to live in interesting times, isn't it? I have one more comment before we break. And that is, because of my musical theater background, you know, I have a checkered past, combination of performing and social work. Go figure. Don't know if I was practicing or performing, or performing and practicing. But anyway, I did both at the same time at various points in my life. And I did live in New York and LA, and I was a part of the entertainment community. I never seemed to have too much in common with them politically, and I still don't. I went to school with a lot of theater people. I went to college, and I lived among theater people for a pretty long time in New York and elsewhere. And so I like to watch the Tonys when I can, because I no longer live in New York. And that's your opportunity to find out and to see scenes from various Broadway shows. The only other time you can see scenes from other Broadway shows, when you live in so-called flyover country, which I've never been prouder to live in my whole life, is at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And I love to see scenes from that, from Broadway shows, either currently running or revivals or whatever. So, you know, I usually try to tune in. And this Sunday night, I was stunned, but not. I wasn't totally stunned by the phenomenal, reeking politicization of every single award, every single acceptance speech, every single moment of that award show was politics. You know, I used to think there was a line between politics and showbiz. There never really was. Politics is kind of like showbiz for normal looking people. And I'm certainly that. I was always kind of a character actress and happy to be so. But from the beginning to the end, the victim parade. Here's a bunch of pompous, pampered, ignorant, arrogant actors who make tons of money, and they don't make as much as they do in Hollywood. You don't make as much on Broadway as you do on Hollywood, but a lot of those people do both. And here they are lecturing the rest of us about the victim group of gays and the victim group of blacks and the victim group of women. And you could tell what the memo has been. I hearken back to my article in American Thinker. It's all about women this year. They're the new victim group, the designated voting bloc. And it just never ended. From Amy Schumer to everyone else down the line, it was all political. I've even been just disconcerting. It's disconcerting to see great classic Broadway shows politicized and updated to be politically correct. Now, you know, some of this, it's okay, but the great classic musicals of Carousel and others have been politicized. They apparently did a revival of My Fair Lady, in which in the I'm Getting Married in the Morning scene, and this is in 1920 or whatever, I don't know the exact year, all of the dancing girls were men in drag. That show's never been done that way. But, you know, when you live in politically correct showbiz world, in which all of your friends feel like victims, even though they're playing parts for a living, that's what you get. But the pièce de résistance was saved for Robert De Niro, who, as you know, didn't say anything about what he was supposed to say because he's a pampered Hollywood celebrity who I used to like, came out and said F Trump. So I loved it. It was delicious. Not only was it great because just about everybody in that audience of ignorant, arrogant, pathetic, pampered little actor fools. And this is a field I used to be in. I guess you can see why I left. they all gave a standing ovation because Robert De Niro said F Trump. Now, what was great about this was not only that it was stupidity on display. Trump has this marvelous talent of bringing the real ugly underside of people out into the open where we can see it, because he's constantly having people's heads explode. And when their heads explode, they forget to be phony and we get to see who they really are. Like Bill Maher, for example, who tells us what he really thinks. Like a myriad of people are saying that they really do want to take away our guns. A myriad, another woman who came out this week saying, why can't we hate all men? You know, I don't have time to comment on that one, but who knows? Maybe I have a lot to talk about with our guest. But what I'm leading up to here is that how beautiful. It was just delicious that on the very eve, well, actually 24 hours after Robert De Niro shows his stupidity and ignorance, Donald Trump has a meeting with Kim Jong-un and makes the world a lot safer place, takes steps towards making the world a safer place against nuclear war. He faces down, he stares down a dictator that no president has had the courage to do. And he says, I've got a bigger button than you. And this made the left crazy, along with everything Trump does that makes them crazy. And sure enough, he brought this little adolescent kid who will see who he really is, but he's been backed up against the wall. I'm talking about the Korean dictator. And for the left, who's been nothing but failure, 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 unless, of course, you think that their real plan was to bring down the United States, in which they've been quite a success, the left appoints itself the Lord and Master over the rest of us, telling us what will and will not work. I love it. It's like Republican elites who are constantly telling us who will and will not succeed in the political arena, even though their track record has been failure after failure after failure You know, just call BS on these people. That's all I have to tell you. I have to take a break so we can bring on our guest. Our guest, when we come back, will be Glenn Beaton. And you're going to want to stay tuned because he's fascinating. This is Karen Cataline. You're listening to Spouting Off. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Hadley, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arn, on the great principle of equality set forth by the Declaration of Independence.
The great Abraham Lincoln described the Constitution as a picture or frame of silver, built to guard or protect an apple of gold. This apple of gold was the Declaration of Independence and its principle of equal rights for all. This principle of equal rights, Lincoln said, clears the path for all, gives hope to all, and by consequence, enterprise and industry to all. There are many today who seek to limit or distort this great principle by employing a distorted definition of equality, an equality of condition or outcome, regardless how people live their lives. This distortion, if generally accepted, will lead to an America less prosperous and less free.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
And we're back. This is Karen Cataline, and what a historic day in which Donald Trump met with Kim Jong-un in Singapore and came back with a signed agreement. And the left is saying that's not very important. Well, they're not very important. They're increasingly so. I have a terrific guest with me. His name is Glenn K. Beaton, or Glenn Beaton. And he has an engineering degree from the University of Colorado in Boulder. And then he went to work for Boeing in Seattle as an aerospace engineer, and then he went to law school. And after he practiced with a large law firm in Denver, he retired to Aspen, where he's really into mountain rescue, and then became a newspaper columnist for the Aspen Times. The Aspen Times is a very liberal paper, but Glenn's column is conservative, and he has been seen not only in the Aspen Times, but Real Clear Politics, Post Independent, Wall Street Journal, Colorado Springs Gazette, and Lucianne.com. So welcome, Glenn Beaton. I'm so glad to have you on the program.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me on.
Great. It was fun tracking you down. It's not very hard to do, so that was great. You wrote the neatest column. It immediately got my attention. And as I told our listeners earlier, it's called Here's How I Went from Marxism to Conservatism. And you tell a bit of the story. But I'd like a little more of the story as to why don't we jump right in and tell everybody how, if there was a moment that you recognized that Marxism wasn't the way, was there something very specifically that led you to where you're at today?
Well, I can't say that there was exactly an epiphany on a road to Damascus, but there was one point where I started to rethink things a little bit, and that's when I was at Boeing. Boeing, back in the day that I was there, we're talking late 70s.
Is there a train going by, Glenn? You sound like you're on a subway train.
It's the place I camp under the bridge by the railroad track.
I'll stop interrupting you, but it was just so, it was a wonderful sound effect there. But go ahead. You were working for...
So I was working for Boeing, and everything was unionized, including the Boeing engineers. They had their own union. And I was told it was time for me to join the engineers union at Boeing. And I thought, you know, I don't want to do that. I'm not a union kind of guy. I want to be evaluated on my own merit. It was like my first experience with what we call now identity politics.
Uh-huh.
So I refused to join. Now, that was sort of a turning point, but for a long time after that, I still kept up this sort of Marxism facade because it seemed like the cool thing to do. You know, you don't mm-hmm. get chicks by wearing a Rossi uniform and prancing around campus with a crew cut.
Well, and the thing is, you know, a lot of people have said if you happen to be one of those rare teachers who are not liberal, that one of the ways to illustrate to young kids or kids in high school, whatever, about the folly of socialism is tell the kids that work the hardest that they're going to get a C. Tell the kids that never come to class and slough off, they're going to get a C, and watch them scream.
Well, you know, a lot of colleges do something similar. They tell everybody they get a B. You know, if you go to Yale Law School, this has been true for, 30 or 40 years.
You got to speak up a little more for me, okay?
Yeah, I was saying if you go to Yale Law School, they don't give grades at all. It's a pass-fail, and of course, everybody passes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's wonderful, man. That's great. So, so for you, it was for you. It was a common. I can't hear you too well. Go ahead.
I was saying, what's the motivation to study? You know, if you're going to get a pass regardless.
Well, and so that feeds the whole idea of trickle down. What's the word? Mediocrity is what I think is the word I wanted to use. Trickle down mediocrity, that if everybody is judged the same, or to blow that a little bit larger, it's the idea that the left has that we can all be Charles Manson and we can all be Mother Teresa. And therefore, there really is no such thing as a good person or a bad person. I tweeted that last week with Dana Lash. Is the reason that a good person with a gun and a bad person with a gun, it really doesn't persuade them, is because they've never seen a difference. They don't see a difference between making good choices or bad choices.
Well, right? I think they're taught that in large part in school, and to some extent by their liberal baby boomer parents. I have two daughters who are in their 20s, and I like to think that perceptions to this rule. But in general, I think that they're taught that achievement is not cool. Achievement is not desirable.
Hmm. Well, why? Because it exhibits your white privilege, or what?
Well, because there's this notion that you need to balance work with life, for example, as if those are two opposite things. There was a recent column by Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon recently, where he said this idea of balancing work and life is a terrible idea. The way it should work is you work real hard, and that enriches your personal life, and you play real hard, and that enriches your work life. But you don't try to strike this 50-50 or 60-40 balance. That's really stupid. And when he hears job interviewers talk about how they want a life-work balance, and, you know, he just gives them the thumbs down. He says, I don't want this person. This is a person who lacks passion in both work and life. They're diddling around at work, and they're diddling around at play.
Well, Glenn, you know, I'm fascinated also by that, because Jeff Bezos isn't exactly one of the most conservative guys in the world, right?
Right. I'm sure he's a registered Democrat, although he may be having second thoughts.
Well, and here's the thing. He's espousing capitalist principles in order to make his business run, right?
Well, that's right. He's an interesting case, you know. Amazon is now being driven out of Seattle by this tax they intend to impose on big businesses in Seattle. And Amazon is fighting it tooth and nail. I'm thinking, well, how does it feel to be on the wrong end of this, Mr. Bezos?
Not in my backyard, right?
Yeah, maybe you have second thoughts about the opinions that he publishes in the new paper he owns, the Washington Post.
Wow.
But, you know, liberals are always this way. They always want their medicine be taken by somebody else, not by them.
Yeah. No, none of the rules that they lay out on anybody else. I have a cartoon on my website that has Ellen DeGeneres being so much against guns, but of course she's surrounded by six gun-toting security guards, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So she's always her like
guns,
that.
But she doesn't want us to have our guns because she thinks we're little people.
Well, we don't matter. You know, we need to be told what to do. Are you familiar with the playwright David Mamet?
I know the name.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I was talking about the Tonys before you came on. And David Mamet is a very interesting example of a guy who lived his life as a liberal in New York City, in the New York bubble. Pulitzer Prize winning playwright. And he had a similar kind of moment that you did. And what I've always thought is, if we could just bottle this, if we could, you know, boil it down, of course, it's different for everyone, but it has always been fascinating to me as to what it is that opens the eyes of some of the people in the liberal cult. So what are your thoughts about that? Not just your own, but what are your thoughts in a general sense about that? What do you think is some of the most effective things we can do to open the eyes of people in the liberal cult?
Well, let me first observe that this is not a new phenomenon. I think it was Winston Churchill who said, and it might even go back to Disraeli and to John Adams, something like to the effect of, if you're not a liberal when you're 20, you have no heart, and if you're not a conservative when you're 40, you have no brain. So we're not the first generation to struggle with this issue of naivete by young people. Part of it is just they have to grow up. But there's another point that bothers me, and I'm not sure if this was true back in the day of Churchill or Disraeli or John Adams, and that is, for at least my lifetime, going back, my adult lifetime, going back 40 years or so, being liberal has been the cool ground. This is the thing I started with a little few minutes ago. You know, it's not cool to be a Rossi guy with a crew cut. I don't know what the equivalent is now. I suppose it's not cool. Maybe it is a little bit cool to be a computer science major or something like that. The cool kids are the English majors. And I'm not sure exactly why that is, but what I do is every time I meet a cool conservative, and there actually are a whole bunch of them out there, I beg them to be public about their politics. Let people know that coolness can wear a conservative hat.
So list some, I think I could answer this, but I want you to, list some cool conservatives and what makes them cool in your mind.
Oh, geez. Well, the thing about being a cool conservative, or in my mind, any kind of cool person, is you think for yourself. And so it's hard to paint them with a broad brush. But in Hollywood, Kelsey Grammer, for example, the star of Frasier, most successful,
right,
and I think the best sitcom in the history of television, is a well-known conservative. Mel Gibson is a conservative. I think Ronald Reagan was a cool guy, although it's hard to get anybody to agree with that simply because by the time the world got to know him, he was in his 60s and 70s.
Well, James Woods is truly an independent thinker. But, I mean, we're naming the people that you can name on one hand in Hollywood, pretty much, who are conservative.
And in business, there's people like Peter Thiel, the guy who founded PayPal, and is now a little bit of a kitchen cabinet advisor to Donald Trump. You know, these are people who... It's a little bit hard to predict how they come out on any given issue because they don't just adopt the orthodoxy. They think through each issue on its own merit, and so they're going to have a mix of beliefs about it. I'm that way, too. You know, I have a mix of beliefs. When it comes to economic issues, you know, I'm really a free enterprise, capitalist kind of guy, subject to, you know, certain limited, very, very limited regulations. When it comes to social issues, I might be a little bit more liberal.
Right. And you share that with a lot of people. Let me go back to something you said about what concerns you. And you mentioned that what I immediately thought of is what concerns me is that socialism and communism are no longer dirty words to the younger generation. And they've been so indoctrinated by an overt kind of liberal cult that they've been taught that not only have they been taught that America is a horrible country and the root of all ills, but they've been taught that socialism is a better alternative and they're out there pushing it.
Isn't that incredible? You know, I was discussing that very point with a friend who immigrated from Romania during the Ceausescu era, you know, that horrible
Ceausescu, what a maniac he was.
Yeah, and he said he's just infuriated when he hears the sympathy toward communism or socialism.
Yes.
Because it wasn't just a disaster, it was brutal.
Yes, it was. And the problem is, now I have to say that there's also a brighter side here. I was pleased to have C.J. Pearson on with me last week, who's not even 16 years old. And he said that his generation, which is not the millennials, but the ones after that, I never know where they come up with these titles for generations and where they exactly begin and end. But he said his generation is likely to be the most conservative at this point in time that has been seen. And so while, the millennials seem to be struggling, and maybe they'll have a turn too, this overly generalization is probably not as effective a conversation as we could have. But I just think that we are not on the conservative side doing all we can to, like I said, bottle that. Let me give you an example. I've been fascinated by Scientology for years. Not by the Scientology, the ideology, but Scientology, the cult. And I've read a bunch of books. I've read a bunch of books about Scientology and some of the tactics that they employ. I'm an absolute fan of Leah Remini, who has gone out of her way to expose the incredible crimes and out-and-out criminal activity of this cult. And it is that moment when people like Leah Remini, who was born and raised in the cult because her mother, you know, brought her up in the cult, and kids like that. It's almost that same idea as Ayn Rand, who grew up in communist Russia and ended up to be one of the greatest voices for free market and individualism ever. It's that moment when we question and we say, hey, wait a minute. And that's the point that I think a person like you can really be a leader to say, yes, you did it. You made the transition because you started to question some of the stuff that you've been taught. or told.
Yeah, yeah. The phenomena you're describing, Karen, I think is tribalism. That's what a group like Scientology or other cults depend on. You know,
is
you've
what?
Got to think like us. It's tribalism.
Tribalism, yes. But
yeah.
But notice, I wrote a piece once about all the similarities, which I won't go into all of them, about the similarities between liberalism and Scientology. And when you get done looking at the things about demonizing the opposition, telling people not to talk to anybody who asks questions, separating people from their families, there's a whole list of them that liberals seem to be more than ever employing. You know, the total drastic contradiction between, oh, we're so diverse and tolerant, but yet it's okay to hate conservatives and whites and Christians and men as much as possible. You know?
Oh yeah. You know, they'll do anything. Remember when they used to criticize the right for violent rhetoric? Well, you know, you don't hear any criticisms of violent rhetoric anymore, and the worst offenders in that regard are the left. You know, they're out there with graphics depicting a beheaded Donald Trump. They're out there at the Tony with Robert De Niro standing up and saying,
right.
F Trump. And he said the whole F word, not just F, and getting
right.
a standing ovation for it.
And I would add, Glenn, that it is the left that doesn't know the difference between words and action. So to the left, words are violence, but violence is sometimes nothing if they do it.
Well,
so
they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care about those fine distinctions. All they care about is winning. That's really true.
It's true.
It's a classic case of the ends justify the means, so far as they're concerned. They think they're right. They're sure
yep.
that they're right. And so whatever they do is okay because it's in the name of right.
So, Glenn, when you did make, how long ago did you make this transition of yours?
Oh,
I'm so
I was
glad
probably...
you didn't have to take hormones or anything to make this transition. How many years ago was it?
My body is fully intact, and my mind started functioning for the first time in my life. I was about midway through law school. My daughter read the column, my younger daughter, who is 27, and she observed, you know, Dad, one thing that happened about them, too, is you started making real money. Maybe you just wanted to hang on to your money. And I thought, yeah, you know, there's probably a little truth in that.
Smart girl, your daughter. Yeah.
My daughters are 27 and 29.
Yeah, great. Well, congratulations there. So one of the things that I was thinking was, how were you received in the midst of your transition among all your law school buddies and other people, other liberals, in which you started to question, how do they react?
Well, they thought that, you know, I'd gone sort of bonkers, or I guess today they would say I became, what, racist, intolerant, et cetera, et cetera. But the most powerful thing that they have, this is the most powerful thing that the left has, they have the cool factor. And so if you got the wrong politics, you're not cool.
Yeah,
if
but isn't another word for...
That's really powerful.
Isn't another word for cool, basically, it's a term I can never think of the first time I try, peer pressure, collective,
peer pressure.
Non-thinking? That's what cool is.
Well, that's right. You know, the irony about the cool factor is they think the way to be cool and edgy and out there is to be just like all the other cool kids. They don't see the irony of, well, how can it be cool if you're conforming to everyone else? They never see that irony.
You know what, Glenn? It's funny you mention that because I was one of those oddball kids when I was about 11. I was at the tail end of the baby boom generation. So I was kind of a pre-adolescent during the 60s. And I looked at all of those kids talking about nonconformity and watched that they all dressed alike and spoke alike and everything else. And that was one of my first observations, is that they're all screaming about nonconformity and they're all conforming.
Yeah, and it got worse as time went on. You know, when they were doing that back in the 60s and 70s, they were kind of in the minority society-wise. They weren't in the minority for young people. You know, young people had already gone across that bridge. But society-wise, they were in the minority. Now they're not. Now they own the world. In fact, I wrote a column about this a year or two ago. It was entitled something like, Liberals Became the Man, and He's So Boring. And it's the truth. They own the world. They own entertainment. They own business. They own academia. They own nonprofits. Until recently, they own politics. They own Congress, and they own the presidency. Yet they still think, even though they're all the same, and there's so many of them, that they're all kind of edgy and cool. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we only have a minute or two left. So why don't you tell us how people can reach you and where they can read your stuff, how they can get in touch with you and comment and communicate.
Okay. Well, they can get in touch with me by email. The email address is the Aspen Beat, all one word, beat is spelled B-E-A-T, at gmail.com. And they can find all of my stuff on my website, which is very similar. It's theaspenbeat.com.
Theaspenbeat.com is your website. And then,
yeah, that's where I put all my columns. My columns come out every second week, and you can find all of them there. And you can subscribe if you like, and you'll get them in the mail too.
That is wonderful. Well, I'm amazed that you've been able to survive in Aspen as the only conservative columnist of the Aspen Times. I think that's great. It's a pretty hoity-toity place over there in Aspen, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of hoity-toity. They're setting up for the Food and Wine Festival right now, and I'm sort of glancing around nervously on the corner of the street here, hoping that no one heard this conversation and decides to vandalize my house, as has happened in the past.
Oh. May I, I was going to suggest that you speak out and speak out boldly, but, you know, obviously we all make our choices. It's interesting that the very people that are, here I go, the very people that are the most dangerous and violent are the ones that want to disarm law-abiding citizens. Isn't that fascinating how that works? I don't know. It's
fascinating.
And
you
the
know,
most,
I get, as I said, my house has been vandalized, and I've gotten death threats. One time, my car windshield was smashed in front of the grocery store in broad daylight. They don't like me here. But you know the funny thing is, I'm the most popular columnist in terms of clicks of anybody in the paper. So somebody's reading it.
Well, maybe they're all in the closet. They're closet conservatives. I give you an enormous amount of credit. And I give you a lot of credit. I have to run. Glenn Beaton, thanks for being with us. This is Karen Cataline. And go to his website, find him, listen to him, communicate with him. This is Karen Cataline. Next week, we will have Nicole Martin, the attorney in the Masterpiece Bakery case. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. And stay tuned every week for Spouting Off, when there's going to be a whole bunch more to spout off on Spouting Off.